From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Corlott, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Our guest today is University of Oklahoma educational psychologist Jeanette Habashi. She's the founder of the charity Child's Cup Full, and we'll talk about her work providing musical instruments to refugee children in the West Bank.
And we know for sure that two groups since 2009 are still using them, and they're part of a band. And they're working, and they increase their instruments.
But first, Joshua Landis joins me to discuss several stories in the Middle East he's been following this week, including President Obama's visit to Saudi Arabia and the latest from Syria.
America's not going to let Russia and Assad win. Russia's not going to let Assad lose. And that is a recipe for prolonged civil war.
That's all in the next half hour, but the news is coming up next. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Corlott. Joshua Landis, welcome back to the roundtable. It's been a while, and so we need to do a Middle East update. We need to hear from you what's going on in Syria these days. Where do things currently stand?
Well, there's a ceasefire that had been very painfully put together is falling apart today. And as we recall, the Geneva process, which seems to have been lumbering along for a long time, has really fallen apart. Opposition is asking for Assad to go. Assad has said, that's a red line. I'm not leaving. His government delegation said, that's not happening. And slowly, this ceasefire has fallen apart. Now, Russia withdrew about half of their big fighter planes.
Now, see, I was going to say, we haven't even been able to talk to you since Russia decided to remove a big chunk of its activity going on there. So now, what's behind that, first of all, and how is that going to affect how the rest of this is falling apart?
Well, Putin had his mission accomplished moment, and he said, I'm withdrawing troops.
What did he accomplish?
Well, he's shored up the Assad regime, which really took back a lot of territory, put the rebels on their heels, and established the fact that Russia is not going to let its interests in Syria be beaten. Now, once it had shored up Assad, he withdrew about half his planes. There's still a lot of activity. Russia is not going to let Assad fall. But he withdrew half his planes and said, okay, let's go to the negotiating table. You see, I'm doing this in order to get a negotiated solution. I'm not working against America. And he helped Syria attack Palmyra, a major city in which ISIS ruled in the center of Syria. So that was, in a sense, his exit calling card, in which he said, look, I can help you destroy ISIS. We're trying to destroy ISIS, but you have to work with me. The United States does not want to work with Russia. The feeling here is that Assad needs to leave. Russia is a troublemaker, and we're going to undermine Russia. Today, the talk is about getting man pads, these ground-to-air missiles into Syria in a way that would be safe, with special GPS chips on them or something that would – so if they were taken out of Syria, they couldn't be used, for example, against Israeli planes or American planes or somebody else's planes by terrorists. That's the problem. So – but they're discussing this. How do we hurt the Russians? And that is a recipe for prolonged civil war, because America is not going to let Russia and Assad win. Russia is not going to let Assad lose. And arms are flowing into Syria. So it's perpetual civil war. The refugee problem, all the attendant problems are going to be ongoing for some time to come.
So in the meantime, the people in Syria are doing what?
Now, about 70% of Syrian Arabs live under government control, and they are eking out a life, because at least there isn't conflict in their zone. The conflict comes in ISIS territory, which is a big hunk of Syria, and then along these border lines where the rebels meet the regime. That's where the refugees are coming from, where there's intense bombing and fighting going on in these villages that go back and forth. So a lot of people are just very poor. My wife's family all lives under government-controlled territory. They're okay. But the young men are all being taken off into the army where they are drafted, and they're getting killed in big high numbers. So people are terribly depressed. They feel like they're caught. Anybody who's got the money is getting their kids out of there. And that's the trouble. And if your town falls into the battle lines, you leave. And the dispiriting factor is that people look at these sorts of negotiations and they say, there's never going to be peace in Syria, so I might as well go. If they thought in 2 years it would be over, they would stay. But they don't.
But it's going to be civil war forever. I mean, there's got to be an end to it. I mean, you go around, well, you talk about this stuff all the time. Tell us what needs to happen. What really needs to happen? What are the next steps that have to take place?
There's two possibilities. One is that one side in the civil war win. That's how the American Civil War ended. But nobody's going to let that happen because it's a Russia versus America thing and Iran versus Saudi Arabia. So both sides have their proxy armies. So then you have to partition. You have to do a Yugoslavia and say, okay, the Sunnis over here will make a state for them, and the Alawites and minorities and people that are owned by the regime will have their own state, and we'll try to bring a ceasefire and a truce. And then perhaps down the road, like East and West Germany, they can come back together again once the situation changes. But nobody wants that. All of the talking points for all of the outside powers are still, we've got to keep Syria together, negotiated solution where Assad leaves and we have some kind of rebel government conglomerated army, which doesn't seem very possible.
So it's a future Bosnia, I guess. Stalemate and division and no real progress being made.
And ISIS is still a big force.
So let's move to Saudi Arabia. President Obama has visited Saudi Arabia this week. A lot of contention, a lot of difficulty. Obviously, Saudi Arabia's involvement in other issues in the Middle East. But there also seems to be this issue hanging over the discussions about the 9/11 report, that government commission report, where 28 pages about Saudi Arabia have been missing or have been held out, redacted, and not brought to the forefront. And so there are lots of threats going around. Saudi Arabia is threatening that these pages can't come be made public. Victims' families are of the 9/11 attacks are threatening to sue Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is a big issue. What are you to make of
it
this?
It's a big sore, but it's just one grain of sand in what is a much bigger sore. And the bigger sore is that the United States and President Obama have been moving away from their very close relationship with Saudi Arabia. President Obama, in an Atlantic article, called the Gulf states free riders, that they were getting all of this defense for free, and they needed to step up and do more. He insulted them badly, and that comes on top of signing a nuclear deal with Iran, which is theoretically helping Iran get out from underneath sanctions, but so far they haven't been able to. But Saudi Arabia feels that the United States is abandoning them, and the United States feels that Saudi Arabia is way too expensive, it's too Wahhabi, and it's a millstone around the United States' neck. And that's the underlying tension as he goes there. In the meantime, court is looking to sue Saudi Arabia for 9/11 victims and make Saudi Arabia pay the families a big reward. The foreign minister of Saudi Arabia said, if they do that, we're going to sell all the American debt that we hold, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of debt, and we will hurt the American economy. So that's the environment in which Obama is trying to smooth some feathers.
So that's what he's there to do, is to try to smooth this over. I mean, this is – what else is he trying to accomplish? I mean, shoring up our alliance in a particular way. I mean, obviously they're talking about Syria. They're talking about Iran. They're talking about what needs to happen in the region
and Yemen is a disaster, and America has been supplying tons of arms. We've been selling tens of billions worth of arms every year to Saudi Arabia, and they're using fragmentation bombs and other things on Yemen and civilians in Yemen, marketplaces where one fragmentation bomb just hit. So America's getting anxious about this alliance and this arming of Saudi Arabia beginning to take a real toll. But also there are rumors that Obama is trying to meet with the president of Iran. So in a sense, he's continuing to play this balancing game, Iran, Shiites versus Sunni.
All right. Well, we will continue to pay attention to that, Joshua, as always, and return to this very frustrating situation in Syria in the future.
Well, it's a pleasure being with
you. Thank you, Joshua. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this conversation and answer any questions you might have. We're on Twitter, @WorldviewsKGOU, and you can follow Joshua in his blog, Syria Comment, at @Joshua_Landis. I tweet at Suzette Gralat. You can also get in touch with us through our website, kgou.org. After a quick break, I'm joined by Jeanette Habashi. She's a human relations professor at the University of Oklahoma who founded the charity Child's Cup Full. We'll talk about her work in the West Bank. I'm Suzette Gralat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gralat. Today I'm joined by Jeanette Habashi. She's a University of Oklahoma human relations professor, but she's also the founder of the charity Child's Cup Full, which distributes handmade toys and crafts throughout low-income and refugee communities in the West Bank. Habashi was born in Jerusalem, and after completing a master's degree in England, she returned to the West Bank to work with special needs children. She finished her PhD at Kent State University in Ohio and started teaching at OU's Tulsa campus in 2005. She came to Norman in 2011. Jeanette Habashi, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'd like to talk a little bit about your organization, A Child's Cup Full, a charitable organization which helps to fundraise to buy musical instruments for refugee children. This is such a great thing because obviously we've talked in the past on this show with musicians and others that we talk about music therapy and the importance of children playing musical instruments, and particularly those that are troubled or that are of special needs and that have difficult circumstances. So tell us a little bit about this organization and how and why you started it and what it does.
So this is what's fascinating about this organization and the learning process of it. So in 2009, I organized a conference in the West Bank for early childhood education. And we invited the group, the usual group that attend the Reconceptualization of Early Childhood Conference, to bring it to the West Bank in Bethlehem. So I said to my students, so if we're doing that conference in Bethlehem, because I was spearheading the whole process, let's fundraise something. Let's do something for the community. So part of it is like we start selling cookies. I never knew how to sell cookies, you know. Okay, I don't know how to do cookies to start with.
Everybody needs to know how to do a bake sale. That's a necessity if you're going to raise money.
So I did sesame bars. I know how to do sesame bars. But we started fundraising. We did yoga classes and we did music. We did a lot of things. And my students said, let's do some go and ask Best Buy, all of these companies around us in Tulsa, to see if they will donate music instruments. So what happened, we started collecting music instruments. At the same time, we had some funds to take with us to buy also music instruments, Eastern music instruments in the West Bank. The funny part of it, which is you'll be surprised, the learning process. So we get these keyboards, fabulous keyboards from Oklahoma to the West Bank, and we cannot use them because the tunes, there's certain keyboards, like if you buy them Western music, they don't have every tune or every key that you need for Eastern. So, of course, we're still using them, but we cannot play certain music on them.
Well, that's very interesting, considering I think there's this perception that music is a universal language and that you would have the same, you know, you would be able to use a piano from here, there, or there, here easily. That's very interesting that you've had to overcome that.
Yeah, we had to buy new keyboards there, but we still use them, but we didn't have every...
But with different music.
Yeah. I was so surprised because I didn't know that. And my students went with me and we gave... sex sites, I believe, to different, like we went and gave refugee schools, we gave to villages, we gave away to youth groups. And it was fun. And we know for sure that two groups since 2009 are still using them and they're part of a band. And they're working and they increase their instruments. So I'm happy with that progress. And I know the girls' school are still using it. But what happened from that point, which is more interesting, so we learned that we made mistakes, that we cannot go and tell people how to approach things, how to help them. So we said, okay, we're going to start fundraising for after-school programs. And we were successful for 3 years. So I said, okay, we're going to hire the refugee mothers and try to give them a job opportunity in a way we're going to provide for the children. So what we did, I said, okay, what's my skills, Habashi? And okay, I know in education, I know something with early childhood. I don't know how to do toys, but we're going to make educational toys. And refugee women are going to do them. And we're going to collect surplus. And we're going to find a designer who's going to do the educational toys. And we're going to figure out how to sell them in the West.
So you're just, so basically, just so I'm clear, you're reverse engineering a toy of some sort, but using recyclable materials. And when you, because when you say using
surplus,
you're using leftover materials
yes.
of all kinds
yes.
to basically
do the toys,
recycle it into toys, into new toys. And you're training refugee moms
to do the
to
toys.
Do this. Yes,
and we
fantastic.
Sell them. And it took the first prototype, it took 8 months because nobody knew what we have to do. So, which is fine because, you know, we have to test it. And we want to do it handmade. We wanted to carry it from one generation to another and tell a story. So what happened is, okay, after 8 months, we knew how to do it. So the point is, I was struggling with the business plan behind it, which I had no clue about business also. So I knocked on what? I knocked on CCEW. The Center for
Center for Creation of Economic Wealth here
yes.
at OU. Okay,
and I said, okay. Somebody at OU Tulsa said to me, "Jeanette, you have to talk with them." I said, "Yes," because I don't know how to price the toy, I don't know what to do. Any the business behind it, I had no clue. It wasn't like an idea. Let me try.
Yeah, well, that's what they're great at. They take an idea, they help you take your idea and put it put it into business practice. Yeah.
So I knocked the first year. And they said, yes, you're on the line, you know, you're part of the list. Then I started. The good thing about me is I'm persistent. So I went and knocked again. And then they said, okay, the first things you have to do is we need to make sure you understand the business behind it because you don't have it. You don't have it. And then we decide if you could understand the business, you would will take on the project. So after the course and after they took it, they branded, they created the business plan, they created the market strategies, they created everything. And the most important, they created a mindset for me to understand what I'm doing. So they're doing toys. We're selling toys. We have pre-orders now. We are like trying to catch up. And at the same time, we opened a new line. Now what we did, initially, like we were under 510C of Tulsa Council for Arts and Humanity. But now we have our own 510C. We have our student organization. We have the toys. We sell toys. And we created a new line, which is ethic fashion, for women. And we're doing great with that. It's fabulous. We want to hire more women. That's the goal.
What an incredible collaborative effort here as you're trying to do something wonderful. You take your ideas, you bring these refugee women in, you're doing all of this on behalf of educational toys for children, but you're also bringing an opportunity to university students to help and involve themselves in this activity. Well, it's just an incredible collaboration. So just very quickly here at the end, what is your future goal? I mean, you just mentioned the goal is to expand, the goal is to hire more women, to be able to provide more opportunity for women. Very quickly, what is your final goal here? Where are you headed? What do you think about the future?
I might not be realistic, but what I'm hoping is to hire at least next year 30 women, refugee, and to create a consortium. My ultimate goal is to bring more refugee women, to hire more refugee around the region, not only in the West Bank. But we're trying to create the structure of the consortium, how it looks like, open the market to the women in the West. We have so much talents. There's so much talents. We're working with a lot of non-fair trade organization in the U.S. and market. So, and they don't work in the Middle East, so they're excited. The handwork, the craft is totally different than usually you see in the other countries. So they're embracing it, but we need to build capacity building. We need to train them. We need to bring them to the market. There's a lot of work behind this. And CCEW now, it's building for us the framework for the consortium.
Well, this is so interesting, Dr. Habashi. Thank you so much for being here today. And we all look forward to learning more about your organization. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me, Susan. Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Jeanette Habashi. She's a human relations professor at the University of Oklahoma and the founder of Child's Cup Full. You can find more information about the charity on our website. KGOU produces Worldviews alongside OU's College of International Studies. Sam Dupre produces the show, Brian Hardzinski oversees our digital efforts at kgou.org, and Miranda Wilson prepares our research. For Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Gorlott.